called The Black Man Is God.
Yeah, no God.
It's called The Black Man's God.
Gotta
next
make
album.
Sure the level
this is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got
you
this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all this fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
Huh?
You really do?
Huh?
Anybody on your watch?
Anybody in my film that day?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed? Who carry your beat to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the section.
Man, it's been so long since I talked to y'all, but I knew I had to get behind the microphone once again. First of all, it's the month of April. It's Friday night. It's April 12th. And not only did we had an eclipse this week, you know what I'm saying? The sun got blocked out for a minute. It's been a big week. I think we can all agree with that. But it's not just the eclipse, and it's not just the month of April giving us the best sports content of the entire calendar year. April and October, that is. It's not just that, but it was Kendrick Lamar coming out of the stands. He dropped out of the rafters like Sting to diss Drake and J. Cole. That got me out of hibernation, y'all, and I brought a friend with me. It's your boy Jay Hicks. It's the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. We're back to talk hip hop music this evening. Thank you all for listening. You can always catch us on hiphopsportsreport.com. We're available all the time. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/HHS Report, or I guess it's x.com/HHS Report. I don't care. Nobody calls it X. Whatever. Same thing with Facebook, facebook.com/HHS Report. We out here. You know where to find us. You know where to get a hold of us by now. And I appreciate y'all taking the time to tune in on a Friday night. Although it's not going to be Friday night by the time you listen to this. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. What matters is that we're bringing you some content this evening that you care about, because we're talking hip hop music and we're talking beef. What's beef? We about to find out. I have a very special guest, a first time guest on the podcast. This is a man whose opinion I value tremendously. And it's because of this nature, the heavyweights that are involved in this beef. We're talking about Drake. We're talking about Kendrick Lamar. We're talking about J. Cole. And even on the fringes of that, we're talking about Future. And because we have heavyweights involved, I had to bring out the heavy artillery. So this is a man that is... Huh, what's up?
I said, heavy artillery.
Yeah, heavy artillery. This is a man, he's older than me. He's been listening to hip-hop longer than me. He knows more about hip-hop than I do. You know what I'm saying? And I had to get his opinion in here because there's a lot to unpack. And we about to cook up something for y'all special. This is a guy, I've known this guy, believe it or not. Can you believe it? We've been rocking for about 16 years now, I think. My math serves me correct. Yeah, we go back
something
about 16
like that,
years.
Yeah.
I think the last time I saw him was at a bar in Hollywood, California. It was a great night. And
yes. Oh my God.
Fellow Cleveland native, hip hop head to the fullest, to the core. He's Cleveland, Ohio to the casket dip. He's my brother from a Puerto Rican mother, sitting somewhere rocking a Puerto Rican flag on a hat, no doubt. It's my man, Jonathan Rivera.
Oh,
John, how you doing this evening?
I haven't been on too many podcasts, but that intro was lightning. My Lord.
Well, you should have been on
the
podcast,
last time,
man.
Yeah, you're right. You're not the first person to tell me that, but you know, Mr. Late Bloomer over here. I do remember seeing you in California, in L.A. at a Browns party. And hanging out with Browns legends. That is the last time I saw you. That was a couple years ago.
It was, man. It was a glorious night. Got to meet some childhood icons in my life, you know, that night. So that was pretty cool. And,
yes,
and you made that possible. So thank you. It was the night that...
Yes, it was awesome.
The night that Fury got dropped by... Or Deontay Wilder got dropped by Tyson Fury. It was that
yes,
night.
Yes, yes.
And everybody was crowded around
that,
outside.
And after that, yes, we hung out for a little bit, and I did a shot with legendary Eric Metcalf, and
we all did
that night, and nothing could top that evening. It was one of the highlights of my sports childhood as an older guy. Yeah.
I'm actually low key embarrassed about how I was fanning out when I met Eric Metcalf. I'm not going to front.
Yeah, I was up on the same tip. I all on the same.
It was like, you're Eric freaking Metcalf. You're Eric Metcalf. Yeah, like, this is sure. insane. So, you know, Google him, youngsters. He was good.
Yes.
Yeah, but we're not here to talk about football. If we have a couple minutes, maybe we'll talk a little NBA. But I wanted to get you on, John, because the quick backstory. Again, Metro Boomin' the Future got an album coming out. They put out an album with a Kendrick Lamar verse on it. And Kendrick Lamar takes it upon himself to take shots at Drake and J. Cole. And it's pretty unmistakable, right? And he's referring back to some of the comments that Drake and J. Cole made, specifically on their first person shooter record, which yes, was on Drake's For All the Dogs album that came out sometime, I think, late last year. And so Kendrick was responding to that. And it got a lot of attention. And it got the attention of Drake and J. Cole. At least it got the attention of J. Cole. I don't know if it got the attention of Drake. Drake's been kind of under a rock.
It's got his attention. He he's looking like he's letting dust settle, because it's been dusty ever since, you know, Kendrick dropped the verse. It's just been as the days go by, as the weeks go by, it gets dustier and dustier. So it's like Drake is just trying, it's a lot of dust.
Can I drop a bomb on you right quick to start?
Well, please. It's your show.
I'm about to drop a bomb right quick. I'm going to loosen up. Let me loosen my shoulders up. Let me get ready to drop this bomb right quick. All right. We talked earlier this evening, you and I did, about the podcast and about life as we caught up a little bit.
Yeah, we got to set it up.
Yeah, and we were on the fringes of this conversation, but I wanted to save the meat and potatoes of this joint for the podcast. And I didn't want to tell you this in the time, but my initial takeaway when all this stuff came about and I heard, you know, the internet was rumbling like, oh, snap, Kendrick got at Drake finally. Because there's been subliminal shots for years. You know what I'm saying? Both sides. Yeah. Drake, even though Drake and Kendrick collaborated with each other like 10 years ago, they've still been kind of taking subtle shots back and forth. Cole's been kind of coming out of nowhere, staking his claim as the best MC in the game. And my initial reaction is that, like that, which is the future with song with Metro Boomin that Kendrick appeared on, Kendrick's verse on that song, in my recent memory, one of the more overrated disses I can remember. Overrated.
Saving that for the podcast.
You're damn right I was saving it for the podcast, because I know you're going to come at me with guns a-blazing, and that's fine. You know, I know you're a Kendrick guy, and guess what? We're all Kendrick guys. I think Kendrick is extremely likable person in hip-hop for a lot of reasons. I'm a big Kendrick fan. I've written plenty of album reviews on the website for him. You guys can go back and check those things out. I can remember I wrote a piece when he dropped the Control verse years ago on Big Sean's record, and y'all can check that out too. So this is not a me not having an appreciation or a like for Kendrick Lamar or his music. In fact, it is because of that, and it is because of what I know of what Kendrick is capable of, that when I heard this record, John, I'm like, why are we making such a huge deal about this again?
You know, you have... I don't feel that way at all.
I know you don't. So correct me.
No correction. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. The thing is, I like how you said that he's a likable guy. Because, you know, the song's called Like That. So you saying he's likable, but he's telling you I'm like that. Yeah. But even though... I don't know, man. I think that a big portion of it had to do with the fact that the last project that Kendrick put out was a lot more peaceful. As far as like going at other rappers, it was a lot. The album was very introspective.
He was going at himself.
Yeah, he was. That's what I was going to say. When I remember the first time I listened to it in its entirety, I felt like, you ever just go to therapy and have like a bomb session and feel and walk out of there like, wow, like, you know, it was like impactful. That's what it was the first time I heard the album. So it was kind of like, you know, he was going at himself, like you said, and it's been a while since we've heard him go at anyone. What was it, a decade you said was Control, like a decade ago?
Yeah,
there hasn't been anything
not substantial,
as direct.
Yeah.
Substantial and direct from him in such a long time. So it's almost like, you know, people could maybe people forgot where he comes from, the cloth that he's cut from. And And it was very direct and subliminal at the same time. I feel that most rappers nowadays that are in the big dog conversation like to throw sublim shots as opposed to direct shots. When I was younger, the big dogs, Nas came out with Guns, and the very first line in the song was FJZ. There's nothing subliminal about that. It's like,
we know
why we're here. And yeah. So, you know, that's the difference in what's going on today compared to what was going on then. So I feel like Kendrick played both sides of the fence of being direct and also subliminal at the same time.
So I felt like people know and respect everything that Kendrick does to the point that they attached his persona and his record to him. And then when this came out, they were like, well, this is fire. Like he really went in on Drake and J. Cole. Like, oh my God, it's Kendrick Lamar. Like that's kind of,
well, he really went in on Drake and jabbed up Cole while he was beating down Drake. So that's how I took the like that verse myself.
I mean, so I think that's probably fair, but I mean, so for those who may have missed out, right? Quickly, if you listen to the first person shooter record, J. Cole says, who's the best between, is it K-Dot, is it Aubrey or me? We the big three, like we started the league, but right now I'm feeling like Muhammad Ali. Which basically means we are the three MCs that's a cut above everybody else. And yet I still feel like the greatest. That's basically what he said. And your favorite line, I think, was Kendrick coming in to retort and saying, what was it he say?
When he said, motherfuck the big three. Nigga, yes. It's just big me.
Yes.
Boom! That's that's one of my favorite lines in the song. There's a lot of them. To be honest, I feel like my sentiments being symbolic, that is just like, there's a lot of meat to that. Like, I mean each and every word that I'm saying. Like, it's a symbol. It's symbolic. Like, there's a lot to unpack with that verse. Every line's got meat to it, so...
But it just didn't hit to me like you would think a Kendrick Lamar verse going at Drake would. You know what I mean? And that's just me. Like, so when he says, motherfucker, big three, nigga, it's just big me, I'm like, okay, could I have rhymed that? Could I have rhymed that? Like, yeah, could you have rhymed that?
So I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, and I don't doubt that you could put together a decent 16, Justin. I've known you for some time. I could trust you to put a Heat Rock 16 together and just, you know, and then retire.
Watch your boy.
So here's how I look at it, man. When you come out the gate and diss these dudes the way you did, where you were kind of hibernating, and then you show up the way you did, think about the first round of like a heavyweight fight where we were sizing each other up. Think about game one of the finals, of the NBA finals.
Everybody's
where, you
nervous.
Know, it's a little choppy. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You guys are trying to see, because the thing is, we're in it for the long haul. You're not winning the NBA finals in game one. You have to play a minimum of four games, could go to seven. So there's going to be patterns. There's going to be, you got to set things up. This could easily be a setup 16 for the long haul for the next year, 2 years. Think about the hibernation's been a decade. These dudes have been saying little odds and ends to each other for 10 years. And it seems like Kendrick's like, okay, I think I'm done with these mini sublims. Let's get to it. So you got to put your money where your mouth is type time. And you know, we're hip hop babies. We're here for it.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but Kendrick is a lyricist, which is why he gets so much respect in the streets. He's a true lyricist in every sense of the word. He's a poet. He's a wordsmith. So to hear him come with that, and for that to be the most, like, that wasn't the best bar of the record. It was the most memorable. And I even understand that sometimes less is more, right? So sometimes you can say less and you can say it in such a way, you can emphasize it or punctuate it in such a way that it hits different or hits harder than something that's more clever, but, you know, maybe goes over people's heads. And I think that's something that you could probably even critique Kendrick on, if anything, is that sometimes he's a little too eager to go over your head. And it's like, we know you're smart, but Dick, you don't have to, like, send us all to college necessarily with every rhyme. You know what I mean? But I just feel like, here, let me put it to you like this, John. The universal response after, so let me backtrack. After that verse came out, right, a few days went by, and then on a Friday, I think it was a Friday night last week, J. Cole drops a whole album, like a whole, like, it's basically a mixtape.
Yeah, mixtape. Like
yeah, and it was called Might Delete Later, which is an interesting title. We'll come back to that. And he has a song called 7 Minute Drill at the back end of that project, where he takes a couple of minutes to just go straight at Kendrick Lamar. Now, that record was generally not received all that well by the hip hop population. Is that fair to say?
Oh no. It wasn't.
And so let me just make the point. If J. Cole on that song had said, "Motherfuck your big three, nigga, it's just Big Me," what would we be saying about that?
Way to go, Cole. That's what I'd be saying.
I don't believe you.
No, I think
people would be crushing him. I think J. Cole would be getting crushed.
Okay, well, you gotta step out. I personally, if you want my whole opinion, I feel like J. Cole would have been okay with, like, more, just taking more jabs as opposed to making a direct song, because, you know, the Like That verse was jabbing Cole and it was going directly at Drake. I did say that earlier. So for Cole to come out and make an entire song, I think he's good enough of a lyricist, and the project itself is solid. You know, besides that 7 minute drill song, the project itself being a mixtape, like an appetizer before the Fall Off album, it's a great project. If he would have put some jabs within some songs, as opposed to making an entire song, I think that would have been a little cleaner. But, you know, I guess, like he said, we'll get to that about the pressure that he had from his people to respond.
Yeah, I mean, out, I guess
he put out mid that way. He put out mid that way.
So I honestly don't think that. I think Cole's diss was better. I'm not gonna lie, I do. Like, and not that it was great. I just don't think Kendrick's was that great. Let me go back and read some of the lyrics real quick. So we talked
Please
about the
do. Please yeah. do.
Okay. So we mentioned a big three record, and after that, Kendrick says, "Nigga, bum, what, I'm really like that. And your best work is a light pack. Nigga, Prince outlived Mike Jack," which is a jab at Drake for comparing himself to Michael Jackson.
All day.
On For All the Dogs, but I don't nothing about that was dope to me. It just wasn't. I'm not gonna lie.
We lived our childhood. We lived our entire childhood listening to Michael Jackson fans and Prince fans.
Correct.
Going at each other. But it wasn't in rap. It was in icon status.
Right.
And they were both young men that, like, took chances in a time where a lot of people of color weren't taking chances in entertainment. And they ended up becoming two of the GOATs for that reason. And you constantly hear Drake, you know, comparing himself to MJ with the numbers. So the line, you know, come on.
I think it's cool because I think it's cool because obviously, I mean, Prince obviously did outlive Michael Jackson. Unfortunately, they're both gone now. But I think what it says to me is Kendrick is getting at, you may sell more records than me, but you're not the musician that I am.
You're not.
I think that's kind of the point of that, right?
I've had I don't know if it's the old man in me or just, you know, what I'm into. Growing up, I try to give all music a chance. I really do. it's a blessing being Latino. Like we can jump into different genres if we choose to. I don't know. We have a little easier time doing it, in my opinion. But I've always looked at Prince as like a purist when it comes to music. He's more versatile with it, and I just feel that there's always been that debate since I was a little kid. There was your Prince heads and there was your MJ heads. And, you know, MJ had a wider net casted over the world. I think that there was a lot more pure music fans that were a little more leaning towards Prince. So, you know, those are two icons from the 80s. And you see Kendrick and Drake. Drake's constantly mentioning MJ in his music, talking about the numbers, talking about the MJ. So it's a good, I think it's a great bar to come at him.
It makes sense. I just don't think it was that.
And he lived longer than Michael Jackson.
I just don't think it was that technically proficient as a lyric. You know what I'm
MJ
saying?
MJ died first. I know it sounds crazy. I'm just saying.
I just don't think it was that technically proficient. Again, the bar is high, and we're going to come back to that in a minute. Now, I will say this. In my opinion, the most impressive bar that Kendrick spit, he saved the best for last on that verse when he said, nigga bum, for all your dolls getting buried, that's a K with all these nines, he gonna see Pet Cemetery. That was the best bar of the entire verse.
You gotta put the cherry on the sundae, man.
You do. And so again, this is Drake's album called For All the Dogs. So For All the Dogs Getting Buried, that's a K with all these nines. K is Kendrick. He's got the 9mm with him. He's got the K9 unit. We're going to see Pet Cemetery for all the dogs. That was nice. Yes. That was dope.
Shout out Stephen King.
Right. That was dope. The rest of them though. But if you compare that bar to the Big Three bar and like the other, you know what I'm saying? Like it just didn't do anything for me. And so to fast forward to J. Cole's 7-minute drill, which for all I know, he may have taken down at this point. We're going to come back to that.
Oh, listen, Mr. Justin Hicks, it is taken down officially.
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't know that.
It is down, sir.
It is down. Down goes Frazier. All right.
Down goes 7-minute drill.
Right. So, well, it's going to go down in infamy now. I mean, it was he took it down and it's going to go down in infamy. J. Cole started by doing something that was blasphemous to me, which is he took a shot at The Simpsons and The Simpsons caught a stray. And I didn't appreciate that. It's my all time favorite show. How dare you, J. Cole?
I thought about you.
The audacity and the gall to take a shot at my man Homer Simpson in this moment. The streets don't need that. I'm sorry. And so,
I'm gonna let Duffman go see him,
bruh. I didn't appreciate it. I'm not gonna lie. Even though J. Cole was not wrong when he said he's still doing shows, talking about Kendrick, he's still doing shows, but fell off like The Simpsons. So it's like, okay, The Simpsons fell off, but we don't need to talk about that. He then goes on to say, "Your first shit was classic. Your last shit was tragic. Your second shit put niggas to sleep, but they gassed it." I'm not saying that I agree with that necessarily. I don't really agree with that take, but I liked it. It was an okay line. You know what I'm saying? Like it was all right.
You know what's crazy about that line?
What's that?
J. Cole does not feel that way.
No, he doesn't. And he basically admitted to that. He basically admitted to that. And I heard Charlamagne Tha God say, you could take his hip hop opinions for what they are, but I heard him say that he didn't like J. Cole's record because he didn't believe that J. Cole felt it himself. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, J. Cole wrote it. He put it out there. I mean, like, maybe he didn't believe it. I think J. Cole believes it when he says that he's the best. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I think J. Cole on 7-Minute Drill referred to it as, what was it? It was a warning shot, right? Isn't that what he called it?
So, I think so.
Even though it was a full song, like to your point earlier, even though it was a full song, John, it was still just a warning shot, which is why I don't think he went as hard as he could have. But he doesn't seem to get that pass.
You don't. I don't think you get that pass when you have a solid decade or more of putting out quality music. J. Cole's been putting out nothing but quality, and I feel like J. Cole gets better per project. Like, the older, the more wiser he gets, the projects get better. But within these projects, he has been going on and on for 10 years talking about, can't nobody mess with me, can't nobody see me, and then he gets stepped to for the first time, and you're excited because you're like, we've been hearing you talk about you the nicest for a decade, and now somebody's coming at you, and they're not even coming at you directly, they're coming at you indirectly. You know, I'll reiterate, you know, this, the Like That verse was 90% going at Drake, 10% at Cole, and then Cole's the one that responds first. So you haven't been battle tested, even though you've been talking about you're ready and willing to take on any opponent, and then here comes one, and this is your response.
Well, Muhammad Ali did not have to fight Joe Frazier in his first match, though, John. He's got to step in, okay, step aside the ropes against the best of the best right out of the gate. But no, I'm teasing. But
I hear you.
But no, so Cole goes on to say, your third shit was massive, and that was your prime, talking about the Damn album.
Yes.
I was trailing right behind, and I just now hit mine. He then goes on to say, he averaging one hard verse like every 30 months or something. If he wasn't dissing, then we wouldn't be discussing him. Now, that's not entirely true either. However, when Kendrick put out the Big Steppers album last, what was it? That was last year, right?
The last year before summer? Last.
That was 2 summers ago?
That was 22.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It was 22. His album came out
Okay.
I think it was like May of 22.
That sounds right. Okay. So that album kind of came and went, and there was some heat on that record for sure. I liked it overall,
yeah.
But did it really like shake up hip hop? Like, did it really? Did that album create half the buzz that J. Cole did last year on features alone?
The answer to that is no. Okay. I don't think it did.
I agree with you. And so when Cole says, if he wasn't dissing, we wouldn't be discussing him. That's not entirely true, but there's a kernel of truth to it, though. You feel me?
Yes. Yes. I do feel you. I personally think that the Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers album was a lot more personal than people expected it to be. But a piece of me thinks about how, you know, right before, like a little before that album came out is when Kendrick announced that he was parting ways with Top Dawg Entertainment and that he was going to be basically starting his own thing with PG Lang. And his first artist on the label is Baby Keem. So, and I feel like the Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers album was like a contract obligated album. I feel that it was made and completed because with his TDE, you know, deal, he had one more album left on that deal. And when you leave a machine that was around you and now you're in the process of creating your own machine, you know, I believe in him lyrically. I believe in him production wise. I think he, you know, from just being a fan, I think he has built the great relationships, and he's going to build more for his own thing. It's like your podcast. This is your baby. You're going to do for it 1,000 times more than you would for someone else if you were helping someone, you know, build their own podcast and their brand. So you're right now, you're PG Lang in this analogy.
Fair enough.
So I think that in the past we've seen Kendrick come at people for blood, and we've never seen that from Cole. And the first time that he decides to make a song in response, he doesn't have a come for blood mentality.
No, he clearly didn't. And he even goes on to say, Lord, don't make me smoke these this nigga because I fuck with him. But push comes a shove and his mic, I will humble him. So he's saying that he likes him and he doesn't really want to do what he's doing. You know what I mean?
So it's their jabs. It's all jabs. It's giving jab vibes. Like it saying, is. I want to or I will, but I haven't yet.
Yeah. And he goes on to say, you know, 4 albums in 12 years, nigga, I can divide, which was a nod to Hov, who said that about Nas, who ironically J. Cole let down many years ago. You know, and then he went on to say, if this is what you want, I'm indulging in violence, put pictures in my home, aim the chrome at your eyelids, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't think it was Cole's best work by any stretch. I guess what I take issue with, John, is even before the apology, the overwhelming belief that it was 1-0 Kendrick. I think Kendrick had the best bar between the two songs with the canine joint. That was the best bar between either of those two songs. And you're right about that he only gave Cole a piece of that entire verse that was largely aimed at Drake. And Cole came back with the whole song. But my point is that both of them was jab energy. Like, if we're talking about Cole and Kendrick specifically, it was, like you said, jab energy from both of them. And neither one of them wowed by their standards. So why everybody kind of assumed that it was 1-0 Kendrick after that, I did not understand.
I see what you're saying. I just I do feel that because of the ferociousness that Kendrick is known for, and the way he comes out the gate, and the fact that we have an idea of what that looks like because we've seen it a few times over the years, but we've never seen this from Cole. So we've seen what he says about where he's fiending for somebody to test him. But then he gets tested and you're expected that I'm fiending for somebody to test me. Energy probably double, because it's like somebody's actually, you come with this energy when you're saying you want somebody to test you. And then when they do, you're thinking you could at least double, triple that energy and come at their neck. But he didn't. He was, you know, admiring him in part of this song. You know, that's, what are we doing?
Like, well, check this out though. But okay, so let me again, and again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm firmly entrenched in Cole's camp, because that's not really what my intention is, but I am playing a little bit of devil's advocate here. When we look at Kendrick's history in the arena, so to speak, we have that control verse, which wasn't really a diss for real. You know what I'm saying? Because it was really just like, he was just putting that out there just to make it known to the masses. You know what I mean? Like, I'm out for blood. I'm coming for anybody and everybody. In fact, I have those lyrics as well.
All right, so, well, you pull those up. You got my wheels turning about lyrics.
Okay. So tell Flex to drop a bomb on this shit.
So many bombs ring the alarm like Vietnam on this shit. So many bombs make Farrakhan think that's a dime in his bitch. One at a time I line him up and bomb on his mom when she watching the kids. I'm in a destruction mode if the gold exists. I'm important like the Pope. I'm a Muslim on poke. I'm Machiavelli's offspring. I'm the king of New York, king of the coast.
One hand I juggle them both. That was the one when he said that. When my eyes went up in 2013 or whatever this was, I was like, oh, he's on that right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes.
And so, and that energy and that lyrical dexterity, in my opinion, was better than anything we heard on Like That, significantly. You know? So I know what Kendrick is capable of. And then he goes on to say, God, there's so many things here. Let me just skip ahead to the main part. Well, first of all, he says, I heard in the barbershops being great debates all the time about who's the best MCs, Kendrick, Jigga, and Nas, Eminem, Andre 3000, the rest of y'all.
Yeah, and niggas, he starts naming. Niggas,
just don't get involved. Yeah. And then he eventually goes into it. I'm usually, and this is kind of not quite admiring, but this is what he says. I'm usually homeboys
with the same niggas I'm rhyming with, but this is hip hop and them niggas should know what time it is. And that goes for Jermaine Cole, Big Crit, Wale, Pusha T, Meek Mills,
ASAP Rocky, Drake.
He named me. He named He named your neighbor. Yeah, I remember that.
Big Sean, J Electron.
I got love for you all, but I'm trying to murder you niggas. Trying to make sure your core fans never heard of you niggas. They don't want to hear not one more now, no verb from you niggas. What is competition? I'm trying to raise the bar high. Who's trying to jump and get it? You're a better off trying to
skydive out the exit windows of 5G5s and 5 grand. And then he just goes on from there, right? And
yeah.
So, again, we know what the man is capable of. I do feel like, because outside of that, I feel like it's been mostly subliminal stuff from Kendrick over the years. Like, he hasn't had a direct confrontation with anybody on wax outside of that I can think of. Yes. So he's really just kind of living off this verse, which wasn't really directed at any one person. And it was a memorable verse. It was a Hall of Fame verse, but he's kind of just still living off that from a battle standpoint.
Okay. From a battle standpoint, you make a good point. From that verse and prior to that, from that verse until like now, there's been a shit ton of like subliminal disses that have been going mostly towards Drake out of anybody. That's the thing about these rappers in this day where the subliminals give a lot more mystique as opposed to the direct shots at people. So Kendrick is definitely known for being a sublime king, just like Drake is. And Control was direct, and Like That was more direct. There was a lot of subliminal, but there are direct shots.
There was no mistaking who he was talking about.
What's that?
There was no mistaking who he was talking about.
Correct. So while you were pulling up verses and like pulling up, you know, lyrics and things that like catch your attention, the ones that like you reference are a lot more direct towards, you know, the specific people they're talking about. While you were talking and I was listening, I pulled up the lyrics to Element, which, you know, the Damn album is, it's so aggressive. It's such a big deal. Let me just say that, I was teetering around purchasing Spotify like for a while, and I remember the day that Damn came out, and I said, I cannot be one of the only human beings on this planet that hasn't heard this album. I've owned Spotify since the day the Damn album came out. Like, I've been a subscriber since that day. But
you're welcome,
and the reason I bring that up is because the first time I heard I Don't Give a Fuck, in that I heard Kid Capri. And I heard him say, I'm willing to die for this shit. I'm going to cry for this shit. Might take a life for this shit. Put my Bible down and go eye for an eye for this shit. DOT my enemy. Might catch a vibe for this shit. Then he said, I've been stomped out in front of my mama. My daddy's commissary made it to commas. Bitch, all my grandma's dead. So ain't nobody praying for me. I'm on your head. Ooh. The first time I heard that. The first time I heard that, I said, and then right after that, he says, I do this for Compton. It's what we've seen in Kendrick's career is a street dude that is protected, and he has the ability to get big dudes in the gang world, in the street world, to come together from different neighborhoods, from different gangs. You've seen the unity that he's been able to bring within the streets, and
he's a likable guy.
When you come from that, that's cachet, man. You gotta earn that. I've been my whole life is built on relationships that I've made over the years. My entire life is my connects and my relationships that I've built with people. Kendrick's done that with a group of people that feel unseen, that come from the mud. And when he says lyrics like that, bitch, Oh, my grandma's dead and ain't nobody praying for me, I'm on your head, and he's repping Compton. There's a lot that goes to that. And I feel that that's a big difference between what the world that Kendrick comes from compared to like the world that Cole comes from, where it doesn't seem like where he's from in North Carolina is the grittiest. They don't come from.
He tries to make it sound as gritty as he can.
I mean, but the thing, America's gritty, man. I done been to some small towns, man. You done heard how Gary, Indiana get busy and
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, America's a ghetto, but you know, come on, man. Like,
yeah. No, no, I'm not here to suggest that Fayetteville is more gutter than Compton. That's not what I'm saying.
So the thing, I feel that your surroundings, your environment, and the thing is, growing up, the lines are a little blurry nowadays, in my opinion. You know, you can, with the internet, like, people can kind of, there's a lot of kids and people that, like, can create a false narrative of, like, who they really are. And you didn't have a lot of that when hip hop was in its early years. Like, you had to be from it. And if you wasn't from it and you came out talking like you was, like, it didn't take long for you to get exposed.
Right.
You had to, have a big machine behind you in order to get that off. And most people didn't. So, I mean,
it's funny that you mentioned that, because I want to make a point based on that. But I want to go back and ask you about the apology, right? So after all this happened, Cole's verse comes. It doesn't quite hit in the way that people think. Now, to be fair, again, I thought that Cole's diss was a better overall diss than Kendrick. I thought Kendrick had the best bar. The best singular bar, but I thought Cole had the better overall diss. But overall, I didn't think either one of them were up to the standards that either one was capable of, right? But okay, it's important to note that the people decide, right? The people decide. The people decided that Nas beat Jay-Z, even though there were similarities that I've argued on Hov's behalf in the past for the same reason that you brought up. Like, The two songs that get compared are Ether and The Takeover. Well, The Takeover, Nas was just a part of The Takeover. Nas got one verse. He was dissing other cats. He was dissing Prodigy and all these other people. Nas only got a part of that song. And then Ether comes, and now you're comparing Ether, which is like a 5-minute masterclass, to The Takeover, which is one verse, which was a fire verse, but it was still one verse. It's not really apples to apples, right? And I think we kind of saw a similar thing here. But then we have this apology from Cole, where he basically goes to Dreamville or Dream, whatever it's called, Dreamville.
It's Dreamfest, Dreamville Fest.
Dreamfest, Dreamville, own, Dreamfest, right.
Which I, real quick, I gotta say, it's gotta be pretty baller to, like, get up on your own festival and do what he did. Like, even though people weren't excited and happy about the outcome, but just to have that, like, create your own platform to talk about what you want to talk about. It's pretty impressive, but go ahead.
It is. It is. And so he gets on stage and he tells the world basically that putting out 7-Minute Drill was the lamest thing he'd ever done. That's basically what he said. He said that he might literally delete it later. And you said it's already been deleted.
Yeah, it's gone.
I don't really know what that means, but because we all heard it already. And so I don't even know what Kendrick is thinking right now as he's sitting back and observing all this, because, and we're going to get to the Drake part of it too, but, you know, what was your take on the apology? Because most hip hop purists, especially those of a certain age, anybody certainly over the age of, just about anybody over the age of 35 probably was just like, what in the hell is this? And it didn't look good for Cole. And it made 7-Minute Drill as a diss record look even worse than it was. People already weren't feeling it like that. And then this made it even worse. He compounded it even worse. And he's in the midst of rolling out The Fall Off, which he's been hyping and hyping and hyping. He's been pouring gasoline in his music, hyping The Fall Off. And then he does this. I almost wondered, is this a work? Is this like a professional wrestling thing where it's just all fake? They're all just helping each other out? Yeah, right?
It could be. And the thing is, a lot of these things are kind of in your face. You have a mixtape /EP called My Delete Later, and look what you do. You deleted something later.
Right.
A lot of people can say that this could be the beginning of the fall off because of what could be looked at as career suicide by J. Cole, and then his next album is entitled The Fall Off.
Maybe he's setting up for a huge comeback. Like, he's trying to... Maybe he's trying to ratchet down expectations now. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know. Maybe everything he just said at Dreamfest is true, and that he doesn't have it on his spirit to be, you know, this direct and angry at one of his contemporaries that he admires so much. And so therefore he's just going to avoid that, and he's just going to squash it now. You know, what's ironic about this, John, is that, or not, maybe not ironic, but just interesting to me, is the fact that, you know, I think we all love it when beef gets squashed. We love beef in any way we can get it, right? We love it when beef starts. We love the subliminal shots. Is there beef there? Could there be beef? Did he say something there? I don't know. Was that about so-and-so? Like, there's always the hints of beef that get us excited. Then there's the direct hits that are like these records that we're talking about that get me on the podcast talking to you, right? And then when cats bury the hatchet years later, I saw Hov pull Cam on stage last week. You know what I'm saying? Like, they used to beef. Cam used to beef with everybody at one point or another. You know, Jay and Nas used to beef. They buried the hatchet years ago. All these dudes end up burying the hatchet. And I think we all like that, because when Jay brought Cam on stage, the crowd went nuts. You know what I'm saying? We love to see these guys get past it and mature as men, because nobody wants a repeat of Big and Pac ever again, right? So everybody can agree with that. So we, as much as we love the beef and we love the authenticity that we pray is behind the beef, what we don't want is guys actually acting on it if it's anything above a fist fight. So
yeah, these guys ain't fighting.
No, they're not. But they're not. We don't have to worry about that. But my point is just that, like, it's interesting to me that Cole kind of got out in front of it, and he just kind of, you know, instead of taking 15, 20 years to mature past it, it took him 6 days. And he's like, you know what? This is silly. I'm not doing this no more. And he just tapped out, and everybody kills him for it. You know what I'm saying? But Hov can bring Cam on stage 20 years later and everybody goes crazy. I think that's weird a little bit. I don't know.
I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I, as you were explaining that, you know, I was thinking about just, we were, you know, you like the reference Big and Pac, because it's like they were like two of the first icons in the game that lost their lives to violence. That was a derivative of the music that they were making.
Correct.
You know, even though, like, even in the last like decade, we've lost a lot of younger rappers, a lot of Lils, a lot of Youngs. You know, they've been dying at the hands of this rap game, and but you can look at Kendrick and Cole and know that, like, that's the chances of this staying on wax and not going to the streets is like a 98% to 99% that it's going to stay.
The win probability is 99%
in the studio.
Yes.
So, you know, but I, as we talk about this, like, I think about, like, hip hop's origin before there was a record deal. And before, you know, there was money, like, before there was money involved in hip hop was a music that came out of the Bronx that was kind of built out of necessity. Like, these are people that were living in real effed up situations, but were able to find some happiness in through the music, through the art form, through the graffiti. And the thing is, when there's no money involved, it becomes about bragging rights. Like, there's right. No money involved. We all poor, we all on the block, and we doing this rap thing, we doing this B-boy thing. So you live for props. Like, props is what is like currency, almost in a sense.
It's about respect,
so,
yeah.
So look at these dudes now, man. You know, 50 years later, 50 years of hip hop. We got these heavyweights, and they both got bread. And neither of them struggling. So it's when you're deemed as like being part of the big three in this era, like it's all for props. And because everybody's eating, everybody's comfortable. At least, you know,
these
Maslow's
guys.
Hierarchy of needs. We all have food and clothing and shelter. Right. Now it's on to bigger wants and bigger needs. And Kendra's like, I'm ready for that. And and there was pressure from the crew. And the thing is, I keep thinking about Drake's got a crew, man. Kendrick got a crew. Kendrick got shooters. He got Baby King and he got TDE. Still, even though he's not on the label, he's still, to my knowledge, cool with everybody. Then Dreamville, they got a whole squad. Like, this could have been that when Jay-Z was sending Beans and Young Chris and Neef and Freeway to take care of his light work, that was entertaining. That was awesome. Like, I was hoping that we would get that we would get to shake some shit up and get some Barzy bars out of the click, and this could go on for a while until the main event. But it all, I feel like all that just got put to a halt with the apology.
I mean, do you feel that J. Cole basically did the rap equivalent of like peeing in the bed at a sleepover? Like, is that what this was? like, how bad do you think this really was? Does any part of you did you gain any respect for Cole in some weird level?
Okay.
For doing this, or were you just like, this is garbage. Get this guy the F out of here. He's not to be taken seriously.
I could never just do the he's garbage, get him out of here. I just can't, because he's J. Cole. He's Jermaine
Cole. Some people
Cole.
Are. Some people are, though. That's crazy.
Okay. I'm in my early 40s, and I've worked in education for quite some time. I've been working with high school kids for quite some time, at-risk high school kids, like kids in and out the streets. I feel that at my age, I'm a little more open to what the younger people do because of the work that I've done for so long. So like a lot of my contemporaries, people my age, they will shit on the young generation in a hot minute. And I'm always the old head that's like, hey, well, you know, give them a chance. You know, there's a lot. People my age love to write off the youth. And I'm usually the one that's like sticking up for the youth. So I feel, like conflicted in a way. I know that, that these younger kids are a little more thin skinned. They don't have that thick layer that, that our jaded latchkey kids, you know, generation has.
They should though, because they're growing up with social media. They should have the thickest skin.
Yeah, but it's a lot it's of different. What they see is on their phone. It ain't in their face. Like the things we were seeing, the things I saw was happening in front of me, man. Like you could turn that phone off. You could log out of IG. You could log out of TikTok. Let's keep it 100. Like you have the power to turn it off.
Right.
In the hood, you ain't turning it off. It's in your face.
You're going to keep getting roasted when you come back.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
When you come back.
You
got to
step outside,
tomorrow.
Bro. You got to figure it out. So, yep. I mean, I feel that it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about Kendrick and his upbringing and what we know of it as compared to J. Cole's. And, you know, we do live in a society where, right now, like younger rap fans, like they get over stuff. They're very forgiving. You know, Drake came back from what Push did to him. You know, I said this 1,000 times. We wouldn't even know Kendrick. I mean, Drake's son would be 12 and we wouldn't even know he existed if it wasn't for Pusha T. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But nowadays, like hip hop is extremely forgiving. These young kids don't care about disses. They don't care about beef as much as like people our age and older do. Like that, we hold that to a higher regard than young kids. They just want to party.
I mean, I just think it's I don't look at this as like there's no coming back with this for Cole. Some people are already doing it.
He'll be fine.
Simba's
he'll
out here fine. Dissing him. Like you got different cats is out here already dissing Cole. Like Cole's just a punching bag at this point. And to me, it's
shout out to Simba for being an opportunist.
I guess, but I mean, I'm looking at it like, okay, but Cole's way hotter than you. Like you're just trying to come up off the misfortune. You know,
yeah.
I mean, Cole earned the mantra of being the air quote best rapper alive last year on all those features that he bodied. He bodied everything. And then he goes on Must Delete later and he's amazing. Like you heard the Pie record, like he was off the charts.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, why do we care about this too? Because Ross got exposed for being a fraud and he had a marvelous career after that, right?
Yes.
So why is it that Cole, we're going to rip him today, but like, let's not pretend like this is going to stick to him. If the fall off is as good as he's hyping it up to be, we're going to forget about all of this.
Yeah, but I hear you. You're right. You're right. You know? There's,
you sound like you don't want to admit it, though.
No, it's. I'm. I think as much as I try to be open to the youth, like I still got my old man roots in me because, like, the battles really mean something to me, man. I mean,
well, you're an old man, John. Yeah. So yeah,
yeah. I'll stand on my old man soapbox and love my battles and I still, you know. But the thing is, think about the battles you were talking about earlier, like with the Big and Pac, like, you know, a lot of people died from these things. Like, we don't have that issue anymore. Like, at least for the big dogs, like, they've learned from the mistakes of, like, the others. There's a lot of people that have died in this rap game, but they haven't been, like, the top dogs in the game. So, I, you know, Cole will be fine, but for the purists, there's going to be a big asterisk. Black mark.
Yeah, it's a blemish. It, you know what it reminds me of, John? It reminds me of LeBron against the Mavericks, where it's like, this guy just ascended to this level. Like, we watch Cole ascend to this level of being the best in the game. And then he gets into the finals and stinks up the joint. And then we're like, it's like, well, who's the best player in the NBA? And it's like, well, LeBron James is, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's kind of what we're left wondering. Like, is it Dirk? Is it Kobe? Is it LeBron? I thought it's supposed to be LeBron, but that ain't what we got. So, real
kinda,
quick.
It kind of reminds me of Kevin Durant, because we know how amazing you are, but you pulled the biggest bitch move in the history of the NBA by joining the team that destroyed you. So, you know, as amazing as Easy Money Sniper is, and everybody knows how physically, how athletic he is, people are still like, yeah, we remember that bitch move. J. Cole is a phenomenal MC that is known for that. And he's gonna live on to live another day, but the heads are gonna be like, we remember that shit you did, bro. Like, 10, 15 years from now, we remember you bowing out of this.
And you think that that's fair game?
Yes. Oh yes. Oh yes. I will never forgive Kevin Durant for what he did, and it's probably a lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm a Cleveland boy. But at the same time, even if I wasn't, that was some hardcore sucker shit. So.
It was. You're not lying. What is your take on Drake not really saying anything yet? Like, because he's been kind of sitting back and just observing.
It's smart. He's letting these cats get at each other, and he's collecting data. And I'm hoping that either him, his team, Quentin Miller, whoever's involved, you know, let's get this hotness together. And you did mention Charlamagne earlier. I wasn't sure how you felt about mentioning other podcast people on your podcast, but, you know, I did hear in Joe Budden's podcast where he did say that because he's so connected to the game, that Kendrick and Drake have some heat rocks on deck for each other. And it's just a matter of time when we get them. You know, Drake might be one of those people. I was thinking at midnight Drake would drop something. He didn't. You know, we didn't even talk about the fact that Future just put something out and had Cole on it, which kind of subliminally says, listen, I'm cool with you, Drake, especially him and Metro Boomin, because Metro Boomin and Drake's been going at each other for quite some time. So right. Him putting Cole on Future and Boomin's album is saying, you cool. The one we really want is Drake.
So you think it's genius, basically, the fact that he's just kind of standing by, letting them trade their jazz. And like you mentioned, too, about, you know, Cole hopping on the track with Future and Metro Boomin. Some people feel like Cole stabbed Drake in the back.
Yeah, but, I mean, what are we talking about here? All's fair in love and war. It was nice and it was cute when, you know, Drake and J. Cole were on tour together, you know, singing a first person shooter song and doing a little 1-2 harmonizing on tour together. And the whole time Kendrick's just watching it like, okay, that's what y'all doing. So then, you know, you kind of gotta, even though you guys made some money together and went on tour together and had your fun, you know, sometimes you gotta you got to detach yourself in order to take care of yourself. So that's what I'm seeing right now. And it's all, a lot of this is happening quickly, man. There's not a lot of time to digest pause before you end up, you know, having something new brought to the table.
Well, I mean, Drake could have dropped the disc right now while we're on the phone, for all we know, you know what I'm saying? While we on the pod right now, he could have dropped something. But
yeah,
and I think that the future coming back with Metro Boomin with another whole album out of left field, like, it's like y'all just put one out, like, damn.
Yeah.
And so there's this future angle here, and then there's this, you know, Drake. What I found interesting too was that, before I forget, on Might Delete Later, who did J. Cole have as a featured guest on that record?
He had
Ab Soul on there.
Thank you for bringing this up. I have to say this. Me hearing that song let me know that this is going to be on wax. This whole, there's absolutely zero beef that will come from this, because there's no way that you could have somebody from your camp, you want to call it former camp. I know that, you know, for the most part, that they still got to be, they're still all crew. Let me tell you this. I mentioned this to my godson over the weekend. You know, in the 90s, in the late 90s, we missed an opportunity for like Bone Thugs and Harmony to make music with Snoop, because and these were two of the most multi-platinum iconic group/rappers that were walking on this planet. And then it's not just even Snoop, it's like Dog Pound. I'm talking the whole crew, Corrupt, Daz, Nate, Warren. None of them dudes were making songs with this iconic rap group from Cleveland, because they were loyal to their
kids. Pac did though.
But I'm talking about who was rocking with Easy and who was rocking with Dre. I'm not okay. Pac gotcha. is kind of in a different conversation for what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Think about what kind of bangers like Snoop and the Dog Pound could have made with like members of Bone Thugs. They could have had cross projects. They could have shook the world. They could have went on tour together. But you got Easy, you got Bone being loyal to Easy, and you got Dog Pound and Snoop being loyal to Dre, and the loyalty kept us from getting some potentially beautiful music. As soon as I saw a TDE artist on Drake's, on J. Cole's new album, I'm like, we good. They, it's just, you know, we're
for game, it's rap. For fun. Yeah,
it's rap.
Yep, it's yeah. rap. Well, I think we can all appreciate that, and I think people are sleeping on Drake just a little bit. I think there's this overwhelming prevailing wisdom that Kendrick would just demolish Drake and J. Cole at the snap of a finger if he so chooses. I think that's kind of the prevailing wisdom that I'm kind of absorbing from the hip-hop community. And I don't totally buy that. Like, and again, this is not me disrespecting Kendrick, because I love Kendrick Lamar. I just feel like nobody's been better than J. Cole the last 12 to 18 months.
I agree with you on that.
I feel like he's earned that spot. And so to just say, like, well, Kendrick is going to be better, or, you know, I don't agree with that. And I also feel like people seem to be pretty entrenched in the belief that Push got the best of Drake in their beef. And I think that may be true based on the content that was brought forth. However, if you look at the bars, I don't know that the story of Adonan is better than the Duppy freestyle. You know what I'm saying?
Can I tell you what I would consider the nail in the coffin for that beef to be? Was when Jay Prince put a cease and desist to the whole thing.
We love Jay Prince.
Listen, Jay Prince has that much cachet where he looks at Drake as his cash cow, and he ain't gonna let nobody mess up his cash cow. Drake is like Jay Prince washing his money. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's like, I got this. It's like when a dope boy buys a laundromat. You know what I mean? And like, they're like, I go legit now. I ain't out here doing the street shit no more. So Jay Prince putting a stop to that, what you consider beef, or like whatever response came from Push, was kind of like, Drake got that machine behind him. Like, Houston is his second home. And the thing is that we didn't get an opportunity for that to be bigger than it was. It kind of got halted. It kind of got paused. So, you know, we don't know if we're going to see anything like that this time around, or is Drake going to like let the dogs out, no pun intended, and like, you know, unleash something on Kendrick. And that's why I think that's why people ride with Kendrick in the way that they do when it comes to the three of these guys. Or it plays maybe a big role in it.
Yeah. Maybe we just see Cole bow out and Cole just says, you know what, I want to make music, y'all can have the beef. And then maybe Cole and maybe Drake and Kendrick just trade heavyweight championship bars, and then that's just what it is. I don't know. The 2-on-1 thing, pause, seemed kind of weird. You know what I mean? Like having Cole and Drake both taking shots at Kendrick at the same time, that felt kind of weird anyway to me.
It was the light skin jump,
I guess, but you know, Kendrick fired the first shot. Kendrick fired the first shot. Cole put his arms around Kendrick and said, "We're the big three." He said, "We're the big three, fellas." Like,
why you gotta say it like that, though? Why you gotta use that tone?
That's what he said. Come on, guys, we're the big three. Yeah, that's what they do where Cole's from, I guess. I don't know. No, I don't know, man. I just think
the hood dude out of the three said it's just Big B.
Yeah, no, he said to hell with that. He says, forget all that. Oh man, yeah, light skinned cats definitely took a step back this week.
Yes.
I don't think that can be.
That'll be fine, man. Like I said, man. You know, when Pusha did what he did to Drake, like them college girls, them females that love Drake, they don't care. Like, that's the thing about this. Like, they'll be fine. Like, all of them.
Here's a question for you. Suppose you're Kendrick Lamar. What do you do now? What do you do now? Like, none of this was expected, unless it really was a work from behind the scenes, and this is all just an elaborate ruse. But what you do is you prepare for battle. So you put this diss out, and then you start writing some stuff, and you know you're gonna have some stuff in the holster ready to go for when they respond. Cole responded, and then he said, "My bad, I was just playing psych," you know. And Drake hasn't said anything at all.
I see what you're saying. So for me, from my knowledge and from my just the way that I see it, Kendrick's clip is loaded, and it was probably loaded before he dropped Like That. And then what could potentially happen is that more is going to come from whatever responses come from Drake or J. Cole. From Drake, because Cole did what he did.
Well, don't know if Drake's going to respond.
He has to. And from what I said earlier, Budden kind of hinted that like Drake's got some things lined up. Now, you know, with all this talk, for the last like 12 years, maybe even like 14, no, like around 12 years, I feel that Top Dog Entertainment has been the most reliable label for quality music in the last like 12 years. It's been my favorite label. Everything that they put out is a home cooked meal. They produce zero fast food. And a lot of people, we live in a society nowadays where we want something new, you know, all the time. We want, like, we get bored with stuff quick. Like, we'll watch a movie. What's the next one? We'll binge watch a whole season of something in a day that took 3 years to make. And we're like, when's the next season coming out?
Right.
So TDE does not go by the microwave fast food model. They go by, we take time. So I feel that with Kendrick being a classically trained artist in that way, he got rhymes in the tuck. And who knows? We might never hear him ever if Drake doesn't respond, even though it sounds like from, like I said, what Budden and them say, reliable sources, that he does have some things in the tuck that he's going to release. I see Kendrick being ready for all of it.
Kendrick is too cerebral to not have something in the holster, man. Like, he's He laid the trap.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He put out like that. That was some minor stuff. He was ready for war. He's laying the trap. J. Cole fell in the trap and didn't know what to do. Drake's like, it doesn't appear just yet. I don't know. There's so many internet theories out there about what these guys are planning and plotting and what they're going to do. You could lose a day talking about it or just looking for it.
You know, it's like these little lines in these songs that get me. Like when Kendrick yells, hey, let's get it, bro. Like that's literally like, let's go. Like I'm throwing the first punch. It's like, let's get it. Like, let's go. It's tip off. The ball's in the air.
I love the Kevin Durant analogy that you made earlier. I wish I thought of it myself. I'm still laughing at that.
Got me on the pod, man.
Let me ask you this, man. I want to end with this. So everybody's guilty of this, and nobody's more guilty than myself. And that is, we try to look at hip hop through the lens of sports.
Yeah.
I don't know that they do this in any other genre of music. Granted, there's competition that exists. I mean, I'm sure Vince Gill is trying to, you know, get busy with Garth Brooks. You know what I'm saying? If it comes down to it, you know, they want to be the top country artist. You know what I'm saying? They want to do what they need to do. You know, Blake Shelton want to hop in on a remix or whatever, throw some shots. But we in hip hop especially have this desire to make it look and feel as much like sports as we can.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, and we did it, you know, hip hop sports support wasn't created to necessarily draw parallels between the two all the time, but I've certainly done it before in my writing and in my podcasting. It certainly comes up. It's come up in this podcast, right? And so are we at all trying too hard to force fit this sports thing? Because when we talk about, oh, that's a direct shot, oh, that's this and that's that, and we talk about the bravado and the machismo and just the bragging rights and the pride and all of this stuff that exists amongst, you know, the genre and the culture. It's not athletics, though. Like, I guess it's kind of where I find myself coming out, because in sports, there's a winner and a loser that's clear.
Yeah.
There's a score. There's a time and score. You had more points. You had, you know, whatever, a lower golf score or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, there's a defined winner and loser by the explanation of the rules of the game. Hip hop is very different. There's a lot of ancillary rules. There's unspoken rules. And there's just
gray area.
There's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of ambiguity. And here's the point. It's art. As much as we try to make it sound like sports, it's art. And art is, by definition, left up to interpretation. So my question for you, do you find us trying too hard to force fit this thing to look like sports? Because when we see Cole doing what he did, it goes against all of our sensibilities as rap fans. But J. Cole was an artist.
Yes.
You know, if I wanted to play devil's advocate for Cole, it's easy to come out and crush Cole. And there's a part of me that feels that way too. But if I wanted to play devil's advocate, I would say he's an artist.
Yes.
And he didn't get into this necessarily he wanted to be the best that he could be. He's not trying to go at guys that he don't really have a problem with just because his boys wanted to do it and just because the fans wanted to do it. It didn't sit right with his spirit, right?
Sometimes we are trying too hard to make it that we are, but both the sports world and hip hop are responsible for getting a lot of men of color out of poverty. The origin of hip hop was they came out of the Bronx, didn't have any ambitions of being a multi-billion-dollar entity when it was first born. Like, I remember hearing someone saying that, like, hip-hop is, like, naturally folk music, but there were people that saw an opportunity to make money off of this. And then it became something where people are like, I can get out the hood and I can feed my family with this rap music. And then sports is the same thing. There's a lot of people that like the, Biggie said it best, because he said the streets is a short stop. Either you sling crack rock or you got a wicked jump shot. So the thing is, these two entities, hip hop and sports, have a lot of men of color, a lot of black men that have been able to feed their families. They come from the struggle. They come from the bottom, and the origin of both things come from that. So that's never going anywhere, you know. A lot of people were given shit to Deion Sanders when he made the comment about like where he wants his offensive players to come from as opposed to where he wants his defensive players to come from. You know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
So Deion basically said that he wants his offensive players to be like affluent young men. He wants them to come from where J. Cole comes from. He wants his quarterback and his running back to come from that environment. He said he wants his defensive players to be coming from where Kendrick comes from, because, you know, they want to get their mom out the hood type mentality. And, you know, the defensive dudes will eat you up. He feels that the toughest players come from the hood on the defensive side. So I don't know. In that regard, I feel that, like I said, I don't want to repeat myself over and over again, but the origins of it is making it out of the struggle on both sides.
And I guess that would be kind of the impetus for these comparisons, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
like that would be the catalyst for that.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't know the story of like JID. I don't know Boz. I'm thinking about like artists that are like associated with the big three. I don't know like the guys that Drake has been making music with. I don't know Baby Keem's story. I don't know how they came up, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if like a lot of the artists are cut of a similar cloth of like Cole's artists are cut of a similar cloth of Cole's, Kendrick's with Kendrick, Drake with Drake. So
yeah. Yep. Well, we're going to have to wait and see what Drake does. Maybe he does nothing. Maybe he's taking the less is more, silence is golden approach.
I think he's letting these two duke it out before he decides to do anything. I think he's I give it to him, as much as I'm not like, I like some Drake music, but he's strategic in everything he does. Everything he does is strategic.
He like, said, "I'll hang you with it after I teach you the ropes, nigga."
Yeah. Yes.
Remember that bar?
Yes, I do. Yes. And it's you can't last as long as he has and have the success that he has without being strategic, without having a strong team behind you. And having people like help draw the plays and make sure that they're ran properly.
That's a good note to exit on, man. John, thank you so much. We worked to get this podcast together, man. I was blowing you up for like a week trying to get you on here, man.
I'm here, man.
And you brought it. You brought it. You brought it.
Life
be lifing, man, but you brought it. I appreciate you taking the time and giving us your insights, and we'll have to have you back on the show.
Please have me back. I'll do it whenever you're ready.
No doubt. That's John Rivera coming through, spending some time with your boy Jay Hicks on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Y'all know where to check us out. Y'all know where to find us. Please like and subscribe to the podcast. If you know somebody that likes hip hop, share this podcast with them, and we'll be right back at y'all sooner than you think. It's Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Report. We out of here. Peace.